Welcome to the arena, where sometimes the hardest part is showing up. My name is Linda McLaughlin. Thank you for being here. There have been numerous studies in recent years highlighting the departure of women at a senior level from the workforce. It's been called the Great Resignation, and many have blamed the pandemic. But is that all there is to this story? My guest today is Amy Conway Hatcher. She was one of those warrior career moms, and she's here to share her experiences and her new book, called Infinitely More, Choosing Freedom, A Career Mom's Turning Point. As a follow-up to this episode, Amy and I will be doing a live interactive discussion on Fireside Chat at noon Eastern on International Women's Day, March the 8th. I will share details at the end of the episode and in the show notes. We'd love you to join us. Before I get started, I want to acknowledge that the city of Hamilton, where I record this podcast, is situated upon the traditional First Nations territories of the Erie, Huron-Wendat, Haudenosaunee, Mississaugas, and the Chonodon of the so-called Neutral Tribes. Hamilton is also directly adjacent to the Haldimand Treaty Territory. Thank you for listening. This is episode 50. Well, thank you so much for doing this. As I said to you previously, I've been following you for some time on LinkedIn, and the heavy sigh. It's like it still has to be this way. And here's someone who is doing everything right, in air quotes, working hard, extremely capable, has done all the right things, it seems, and yet is ultimately burnt out and kicked out, chewed up and spat out of the system. This episode is going to come out just before International Women's Day, but International Women's Day plays a key role in your story, and which I'll share in your intro. But I just wanted to say welcome and thank you for being here and sharing your story with us.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. And I have to say, there are some days where you really think you're crazy for doing this. So getting in touch with people like you matters a lot, even to the psyche of, did I do the right thing? Am I crazy? Am I the only one? And so it matters. I mean, notes that I get from perfect strangers really matter, because it reinforces that I'm doing the right thing for myself, but for other people, that it makes a difference for other people too.
And a big part of what you're doing is speaking up.
Yeah. And encouraging other people to use their voices, but also recognizing the maddening fact that many of us still feel like we can't. And so there's a part of this that's really lonely too, because you know that there are other people who think the same thing, and they'll write you, and every once in a while they get in touch, but it's pretty sad that we can't talk about it.
Yeah. And that the fundamental understanding that there are repercussions if you do.
Yes. And whether you see them or whether you don't.
Mm-hmm. It's just understood. Mm-hmm. And how women are pitted against each other in that environment as well.
Very much so, which I think we need to stop. We need to own some of that ourselves, because we don't have the luxury of being pitted against each other. It's let's get them fighting and we'll go off and do some business. I think we have to get out of our own way in that regard, because it's a really easy trap to fall into, and too many of us do.
Amy Conway Hatcher, you're a mother, daughter, wife, sister, attorney, and former federal prosecutor. After over 6 years as a prosecutor, you moved to private practice and eventually became an equity partner in one of several firms that make up what is known as big law. These large legal entities with sometimes thousands of lawyers and offices in countries all over the world. You are often one of the only, or certainly very few women, who had attained your level of compensation and respect. You were and are a woman that others looked up to and aspired to be. You are a warrior career mom, and you never let them see you sweat. But it seemed no matter how many hours, how many clients, how many extras you undertook to make it to each successive level of achievement, There was an acknowledged and apparently insurmountable imbalance between you and your male counterparts, both at the board table and the kitchen table. You changed firms a few times to bridge the compensation gap, but the rules were always different for women. The compensation, the opportunities, as well as the expectation of complicity when it came to boorish behavior and the appearance of diversity and inclusion. And the pace never let up for years. Your children were becoming teenagers, your parents were having health issues, and so were you. But in the end, you did the unthinkable. You handed in your resignation on International Women's Day in 2021. You left the career that had been your whole life. Since then, there have been numerous articles written about the Great Resignation, and one article in particular compelled you to speak up and write about your experiences, which in the end resulted in this wonderful book, Infinitely More, Choosing Freedom, A Career Mom's Turning Point. Welcome to this very special 50th episode of The Arena, Amy.
Thank you so much, Linda. It's truly an honor to be here.
I shared with you via email that as I was reading your book, I was breathless in the feeling of the pace and the pressure and the relentlessness of what you went through. Particularly, I would say, being a federal prosecutor, dealing with the types of cases that you were involved in, no doubt were difficult to deal with. And the environment was still a pressure cooker. But certainly once you moved to the, as they say, the dark side and moved into private practice, joining big law, where you were described as being someone's bitch and that you had to just suck it up and keep moving forward. And then moving into the stage of becoming a mother, trying to become an equity partner. It's just the constant ratcheting up of the pressure. I kept wondering, okay, when is this woman going to break? And yet you kept going and you kept doing more and kept trying to figure out what the secret handshake was or what it was that was going to allow you into the inner chamber. It's a real pleasure and honor to be having this conversation today, and especially as we look ahead to International Women's Day and the last really 2 years of the pandemic and all the writing and hand-wringing that's gone on as a result of the Great Resignation and the women that are leaving in such large numbers from the executive suite, but also from all levels, and the loss that women in general are suffering, and how will we ever recoup that? So you have a very particular story, but it really does bring in that much bigger picture of what's been going on the last 2 years. But as you point out in your book, it's been going on for a long time before that.
Yeah, I think one of the things that going into the pandemic that sort of made me mad as we were looking at stories about women leaving was that there were studies out years before, and even in 2019, about the rate of burnout among women, particularly working moms, in the workplace. And these were prominent studies. So I felt like people knew. So during the pandemic, when you started to see women leaving, I thought it was a cop-out to say that they were leaving because of the pandemic, because I think women were struggling before the pandemic, and not because they couldn't handle it, but because the expectations of perfection and juggling and doing it all were just so high and too much. I felt shame on corporate leaders, right? They knew this information, yet they allow it to continue. And when we're all then trapped in our homes and actually spending time with our families, how can you blame people for saying, you know what, I have a lot to do. I am no longer going to sacrifice everything for organizations that still don't see what it takes for me to show up and perform at the levels, the highest levels that make companies and leaders successful. I thought, good for them. Good for women to say, I'm gonna stand up for myself and my family and find another way instead of, frankly, working myself to death. And that's sort of what I was seeing and feeling. And that was even before I quit or pivoted out of the big law job. And it's interesting. You talk about, Linda, going into big law and sort of the pace. I would say for me, the pace in the beginning was normal. It was coming out of a prosecutor's office where I was trying cases that were in the area of homicide and sex offense. I worked a ton of hours when I was a prosecutor. I worked a ton of hours when I was a young lawyer in big law. I wasn't the youngest. Obviously, I'd come in with some great experience. But I think where it really started to change for me, and the pace had a relentless feel to it where I had really no breathing room, was as I started to rise and succeed in the partner levels. And I also became a mom around the same time. So I was doing motherhood and hitting that ramp for my career at a parallel moment.
I just want to take a sec and share a passage from your book, which I feel really summarizes what you and others are up against. When you are the cool, hardworking up-and-comer, the system and male power figures are more than happy to promote women. As women become competition, the game shifts. It gets infinitely more complicated, grittier, tougher, at times, dirtier.
I like that quote. I think it's true. I didn't think my world had this frenetic craziness to it. Like, for me, it changed as I was becoming competition and a mom. And it was happening at the same time. And that was, I think, like, your competition. And the question is, are you going to stay in the game? And are you really going to go head to head with me? Or are you going to step back a little bit and I have my advantage, I can get ahead? And I wasn't one of those women who stepped back. So I decided, nope, I'm going to go head to head with you. I'll work during labor. I'll come back after my miscarriage. And like, I'm going to stay in it. I'm not going to give you any excuse not to treat me the same. And I think that's daunting for some people, right? When you become competition and you're that fierce in your desire to stay in it, I think people get more uncomfortable because I think there have been some assumptions made along the way, not intentionally, maybe not even consciously, that some people are going to drop out and your group of competitors, when you hit the next line on the field, are going to be smaller. Yep. And it's scary when they don't. And it's scary when it's somebody who's capable of doing that much standing next to you.
Mm-hmm. I am sure there are those who would say, get yourself a coach, reset your priorities. You need to find balance. You need to do all these things and that will fix it. Or, dear, these are choices you need to make.
Well, I hate both of those.
Or both of those at the same time.
Both of those statements, I really like it, really. And I've heard them.
Of course. Yeah. And what do you say to that?
I had coaches. I had coaches who helped me to perform at even higher levels within the environments that I was in and build relationships to play the game on their terms, on the terms that the traditional male-dominated industry had set. So I had great coaches for that. I had coaches who would talk to me about how to operate in a man's world, right? As a woman, and how to fit in. I had a coach towards the end who said, I actually want to talk about who you really are underneath all that armor and what you love and what fuels your soul. I don't want to talk about how you fit in that world. She was amazing, right? Because she, in some ways, took my breath away and made me stop. I think I drove her crazy in the beginning, but I think she made me pause in ways that maybe I hadn't before. The other thing about the well, dear, you have to make choices. And that's so patronizing. Yes, we have to make choices. I get it. I'm not stupid. But I do think that you can have a lot at the same time. And I do think women are willing to sacrifice to achieve success in their careers and to make really good money, to have leadership roles, And yes, you have to make choices. None of them are easy. They're all impossible. But I think that women are willing to make those choices to achieve success. So don't feed me the BS about you have to make choices as if I don't know that. I guess the question is, am I making choices where I'm basically cutting a deal with the devil because the only choice I have is to undercut myself and sell myself short? That's a choice I'm no longer willing to make. And I think that too many of us are given choice A or choice B, and we think that's all that's available to us. We have to pick one. And what I hope, you know, as people reflect on this time of COVID and coming out of it and where do we go from here, I hope they see that they have more than A and B. They can define their own C or D and say, no, thank you. I'm not willing to do that unless you're honest and candid about what that choice actually is. Because choice A, sometimes we believe in diversity, we believe in inclusion, we believe in an environment that is free of bias, but there's no muscle for it, there's no support for it, there's no investment in it, and so it's not real. So don't tell me that choice A is real and that's an opportunity that I should sign on to, because sometimes it doesn't really exist. It's a myth, it's a fiction.
Mm-hmm. One thing I would add, we're two white women who are having this conversation. You add the element of race into this and it elevates the issues even more. And it's not to diminish for one nanosecond your experience, but if you're a Black woman who's a lawyer, it's even worse.
You're absolutely right. And there's one thing that was interesting as I was finishing up the book, as some people read it and they said, do you need to drop a footnote about the race issue? And I said, no, because this is my story. I want others to have the opportunity to share their stories, and they're all going to be different. And I shared the book with a couple of my friends who are women of color, and they said, absolutely not. We love the fact that we get to read your story and it inspires us to tell our own story. We don't want to be reduced to a footnote or a paragraph or have you speculate about what it's like to be us. We'd rather have you ask us and invite us to speak. And so I agree with you that being even more different in the room, being even fewer and far between in the room, is multitudes harder. And I think we need to understand that too. The fascinating thing to me is that I had every privilege and every advantage, and it was really hard. And I played the game. I thought it was the way it was supposed to be played, or the way it had been laid out for me. Mm-hmm. And it bit me. So I can't even imagine if you didn't come with the privilege that I had, or some of the opportunity, even if it was more narrow. I think we need to be digging into those issues too.
Yeah, fair enough. Take me back to when you were growing up. What was dinner conversation like in your household?
I remember it being chaotic and fun. I remember there was always people racing in from school and one activity, and we were all swimmers when I was younger. My sisters and I were closer, and then my brother was born. He's 8 years younger than I am, so he comes in at a different time. But I remember when my sisters and I were young, it was all about getting more food so we could get to the next swim practice. And it would be this chaotic discussion about people's day or what we needed to do. Everybody's grabbing at food at the table. But my mom always made a point to having something warm and homemade and fulfilling at the table so that we could all sit together, and that we remembered what it was like to walk in the door and smell mom's cooking. And yet my mom was a workhorse herself and went to law school when I was in high school, actually. But before that, she'd always had something going on. She always had jobs. Yet what I remember most when I was young is walking in the house and just smelling some of my favorite meals.
I remember the story about your brother poo-pooing having to do the dishes and the repercussions of that.
My brother hates the story, but it's pretty, I think it's so funny. In our house, there really were no girls' jobs or boys' jobs. We always laugh about it. My dad, before my brother came along, I was his sidekick. I was the son he never had. So I would be the one tarring the driveway, or my sisters did too. But I did a lot of things with him that you would do with your son. But equally, the jobs outside were important to contribute to, but the jobs inside were equally important to contribute to. And that included doing the dishes and folding laundry and ironing my dad's handkerchiefs. And there's one night where we were all around, we were in the kitchen and we were all cleaning up our dishes. And my sisters and I were in our teens. And we were bringing our dishes to the sink. And again, like frenetic activity, a lot of conversation. And I remember my brother sitting at the table and saying that he wasn't going to get up because doing the dishes was a girl's job. And the silence, to his credit, he was like seven. But the silence in the kitchen was just deafening. It was like all this chatter just stopped. And my sisters and I looked at each other and we were like, oh man, he is dead. Because we knew that my mother would never stand for that. There was no world in her worldview that allowed for her son not to be able to cook for himself, help clean up, and pitch in. And there definitely were no girls' jobs. So he learned that real fast. And I will tell you, he's really good at helping out at home now. But I attribute that to my mom's training.
And he ended up on dishes for a couple weeks, as I recall.
Kitchen duty. Yes. Yep. And it's funny because my son had made some similar comment years ago. And all I have to say now when there's some comment that just doesn't belong is dish duty. That's all I have to say is those two words. And everybody knows that you cross that line of you're not worthy of this job. And of course, we all are, right? Everybody's worthy of any job. And I think it's important to know that just from a work ethic standpoint, again, like setting aside the gender issues, but just work ethic and knowing how to contribute and knowing how to be helpful in a living environment, we all have to learn that. And then we have to learn how to be team members at work and on projects and in other areas. Everyone needs to know that no matter what your title is, at the end of the day, if you're leading a team and the team is struggling, no job is too small. No job is too inferior. Your job is to help people pick up the pieces and show that even though you're leading the team, you're also part of the team. And if the team mm-hmm. needs help, that you're not afraid to get your hands dirty, roll up your sleeves and wash the dishes too. In some ways, I hate that it's about gender, that we have that dividing line, because the question is, are we all showing up at our best? And are we competing at level? Are we in the best competition? Not the competition where somebody gets to cut somebody else's Achilles heel or take a bat to their kneecap. You know, are we really operating at our true fundamental best, which means we all have to be in shape. We all have to train. We all have to compete at levels that stretch our thinking and that take us beyond our comfort zones. And if any of us takes the easy street, doesn't do the dishes, thinks that washing the car is below them, there's this sense of missed opportunity for what you can learn from doing a task or training at a certain level. I think I'm looking for all sorts of different ways to engage men. I'm married to a man and I have a son that I'm raising. And I think that it's not just about their ability to say that they want their sister or their mom to have an equal shot at the prize. I think it's also about giving them fair opportunities to compete themselves where they're not stereotyped either. And to your mm-hmm. point, that means that they achieve being on a team with a woman means that she's going to understand when stuff is tough at home because they just had a baby. She's going to be able to have his back in ways because she just knows what it's like to be in that house. I think that there are so many things that if we talked more about and shared, we would see differences and we would see similarities. And there are many things that could bond us into being even better team players. Mm-hmm. So I think there's sort of a lot there. I think my mom's view, look, everybody's got to get off their butt and help out because I've worked all day. I made this lovely dinner and it is time for you to buck up and help and do your part And I'm not putting up with any of this girls' job, boys' job stuff. And obviously, my dad came from a different generation, so it's not like my dad was getting up, but she sure as heck was not going to accept that from her son. And he's such a good sport about it. But I would say that he's raising his sons with that very same work ethic.
That's great. What event in your life has had the most profound impact on you?
It's such a deep question, right? Like I could think of a bunch that I could throw out, but I would say writing the book and publishing the book has probably been the most profound and scary thing that I've ever done. I've tried murder cases. I've tried sex offense cases. I've sat with victims who, you know, one woman had a bullet in the head and had her throat slit. I've done some really tough stuff in my career. Some would make your heart stop. I think writing down my experiences and sharing a story that I didn't think was all that special, right? It's not all that shocking. We're not talking about a casting couch. We're not talking about sexual assault or anything like that. We're talking about the wounds, the paper cuts, what women have to put up with. In a world where it's not acceptable and silence is preferred, I think that has been the hardest thing I've ever done. To be able to say, yes, I'm tough. And yes, I could do a lot at once and I could perform at incredible peak performances. But to also share that at some point I hit a breaking point and that I wasn't always okay. That was really hard.
And what's the response been from those that you worked with? Have you heard from some of those people and what have they shared?
So there are people who were connected to the book in some story, who I had shared excerpts with or the whole thing with before. And so they weren't surprised and they're dear friends and stayed in touch. But I wanted to make sure what I was describing was accurate. This is my lens. Is this wrong? Is there another way to look at it? Were these stories the way they happened? And I got validation that they were the way they happened. So there was that crowd. There are others who I'd worked shoulder to shoulder with for so long, who thought I was so tough and could do it all and asked for a lot of sacrifices. And interestingly, so far, it's been a lot of crickets, a lot of silence. I do hear from people behind the scenes who will send me notes privately every once in a while that it's getting noticed. There was at one point a question about whether there was damage control that they were going to do. And my response to that is, look, let's just stop. Let's all just stop the silliness. At the end of the day, the numbers speak for themselves about women leaving jobs, big jobs too. And certainly in big law, the numbers speak for themselves. And you don't have as many women who are in leadership positions. So when you're losing them, that speaks for itself. And the question is, what do you want to do about it? And do you want to understand it? And you have to own that, right? You have to own that decision to understand it or not understand it, to do a better job in the future or not do a better job in the future. All of that has to be owned. I'm doing my part by speaking up and hopefully speaking up for women who will become encouraged to speak up as well. But it's hard when you're still in the system. So the question is, are leaders going to listen to anybody but people who are only willing to tell them what they want to hear for fear of blowback and punishment if they tell them the truth? And my whole goal is to see if I can get people to be a little bit braver, to have conversations that will really pull back the curtain on why women get tired and tired of it and leave or not. But then if you don't pull back the curtain, then you have no right to sit at the table and wring your hands and wonder why there aren't more women sitting around. Mm-hmm. Because it might not be us. It might be you.
I just wonder whether, like so many things, climate change and Black Lives Matter, and it's the crisis that gets everybody focused. Or for that matter, as you referenced earlier, the casting couch with the Me Too movement. What will the crisis be that will really bring this to the attention to the broader community? Because the people who are in big law get it and see it and experience it. But outside. It's just big business. That's just the way it is. Why is it important to change this?
I've done a lot of thinking of that. And am I really going to waste my time on changing big law as an industry? And the truth is, we've been talking about the same problems for 20, 30 years. If you talk to women who are senior to me 10, 20 years, we've made progress, but we've made progress on the easy things, really not on the hard things. And some of them are surprised we're still having these conversations because they believe that we were going to be in a different place when I got there. I'm hearing from people who are younger than me who are saying, look, I don't want your life. I don't envy what you had to do. I am not interested in being you because it's too hard and I want to enjoy my life. So there are other people that are making, you know, choices. And so what I say to myself every day is I decide, do I want to continue to advocate? I think the answer is I will raise awareness within an industry for sure. But I know that the issues that I faced are really much broader than just law, right? It goes well beyond the industry. I've heard from plenty of women. I think the question is, you know, we can continue to raise issues. We can talk about culture shifts that need to happen because I truly think they need to happen. And they're doable if people really have the will. But we have to recognize the reality of where we are and how tough it is and that there's not as much. I think people want to say that they want equity, but I don't think they're quite willing to give up the power, redistribute some of the money in ways that will create true equity. So in that world, I think women have to be smarter about their careers. I think we have to change the way we think about how we negotiate for our salaries, how we approach our jobs, how long we're willing to stay. When are we going to pivot? Do we want to open up our own business and start taking the bottom line? Because really what's going to get the attention is when bottom lines are affected. And I think everybody thought the more women that went in-house, who became clients, who had the ability to make decisions about where they bought legal services from, that would really be a game changer. But the bottom line is a lot of them are still working for boards that are primarily white men in their, you know, 60s and 70s. And there are limitations to what they can do when they get bet the company type cases or significant complex matters where the management team and the board is looking closely. So I think that we can't assume anything. I think we have to assume the reality of where we are and the reality of what we see. And we can try to advocate for things to get better, but then we have to get smarter ourselves.
Mm-hmm. What has being in the arena meant to you in your life?
It has always meant being in the arena and being a fierce advocate for others. I can't tell you how many times I've been in the arena and truly, to my core, fought alongside very brave clients who were fighting for justice for themselves. In the corporate world, not, you know, as much, it looks different, but there is a sense of when you're going against the government or you have the press all over you and maybe you deserve it a little bit, but maybe not the amount that you're getting. There's a feeling of being able to righteously fight back. It's always been to do that for other people. And I think one of the things that I've realized in this journey is that the person I wasn't doing it for was myself. And that's what my kids picked up on. And that's what they called me out on, because I think it affected the mom who showed up for them.
What does living a courageous life mean to you?
It means being willing, being brave enough to speak your truth and to mean what you say and say what you mean and walk the talk that you're speaking. To me, that's living courageously.
And what impact do you want to have on the world?
It's a deep question. I've always had these lofty views of I want to change the world. I want to make a difference. I think what I realize now is first and foremost, I want to be a good person and I want to be the person who can continue to advocate for other people. I think that's really important. I want to be a really good mom for my kids and be able to give them the kind of advice that I'm willing to live. And the more that I can influence that and influence people around them and around me into living braver lives where we're speaking up for what's right, as opposed to what's convenient or what's hard, what's easier. I think making incremental progress is just as good at shifting the world in important ways as anything I had imagined in my young idealistic mind of what change the world means. But I'd love to influence the way people think about tolerating each other and embracing each other's talents and gifts so that we're doing a better job of finding solutions to really hard problems. And the world's hard enough. We're really smart people. There's so much that we could do if we weren't screaming at each other on opposite sides of the field or the conference room or the political spectrum. You know, if you could find ways to bridge the gap where people who had different thoughts, ideas, perspectives, creative brains, the way that they came together and found ways to work together better, I think that'd be pretty cool.
If you had the opportunity to have a 5-minute conversation with someone living or dead, who would that be?
I'm going to say this because it's on the forefront of my mind. I would sit down with Michelle Obama. I saw her speak the other night at a chief event. It's a women's organization that is about propelling more women into positions of leadership, but also importantly, keeping them there. So it's really about retention and creating peer-to-peer boards of directors and kitchen cabinets. But Michelle Obama spoke at an event, and I have to tell you, it was one of the she's courageous in her thinking. Obviously, she's operated at an entirely different level than many of us ever will. But the way that she translates her experiences to a worldview, they do reflect the experiences of all of us at different levels. So walking into a job and being someone who's different, looking different, having people expect you to behave in certain ways that really are not what you're used to or what you're all about, having people look and wonder if you're going to fail. One of the things that she talked about that I think I missed, and I wish I'd gotten the memo many years ago, was that we spend a lot of time perfecting our skills in our jobs and also trying to influence the people who can promote us in our jobs and propel us ahead in our jobs. But we don't spend enough time investing in our kitchen cabinets or personal boards of directors. And I think she's so right. I think that women have gotten so used to going into work and proving that they belong and spending every ounce of their energy doing that. And then there's no time other than for family, because you're cheating them anyway. There's no time to really have that support network that's about keeping you honest in your career path. And where are you being honorable to yourself, to your peers, to your family, to your pride? You know, that's where we get into that. We talk about the pay gap or working 24/7 to a point where you're at burnout. You need those people around to say, we're going to celebrate your successes. We're going to help you figure out that political maze within the organization that you're in and answer some of those really hard questions. We're also going to call you out and tell you when you need to pivot. When you're not living the values that you believe in, and no matter how much money they pay you, it's not making you a better person. It's not putting you in a position to really be proud of what you accomplished. And it's not that you're doing anything wrong, but you're working in an environment where you're becoming more like them and less like you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I heard board of directors and kitchen cabinets. What's that about?
So kitchen cabinet to me is the women who are powerful enough to be in the board of directors, but they're welcome in your kitchen, right? They're the people that you would share your secrets with over a meal, a glass of wine. Remember, I grew up in a family where we gathered and shared stories around food. My sister's a chef. My mom is an incredible cook. My other sister's an incredible cook. We gathered around tables. And so for me, that's probably the closest thing I could get to family. Those are the people who are willing to see you in your shiniest, strongest moments, but that are also able to see you at your weakest and support you. And I think one of the things that we don't do very well as badass, overachieving women is let people in to see that you're weak. Admit that you can't do-it-all. Show that you need a little bit of help, or that you're not able to handle that guy down the hall who's taking credit for work that you did. How do you navigate some of those really thorny problems, but in a way that is, hey, I don't know that I love the word authentic, but authentic to you, like true to you, to who you are. But I think the other thing too, they're the women who can make you laugh and laugh at situations that you might otherwise cry about, and also laugh at yourself. Have some ability to be able to reflect and say, boy, I screwed that up. Or maybe my comeback should have been different. Or maybe I should decide I'm not going to work with those, you know, with certain folks anymore because they're not going to honor my strengths as a woman or as a contributor. I think those are that's a kind of feel that I think of a kitchen cabinet, because it's not formal like a boardroom. It's not something where you have to pretend again. It's an environment where you can show up in your sweats and your t-shirt and eat filet mignon and have a glass of wine if you want.
Any final thoughts you'd like to share before we wrap up?
What I would say about my experience in the book is it was really my effort to extend an invitation for people to share their stories and to know that they're not alone in what is a very treacherous, difficult career climb for every woman. I don't know any woman who would say that it's easy, but I think the more that we see each other out there in ways that are human, not as competition where we're throwing sharp elbows around, I think that we can really come together and achieve even more if we're willing to see each other for who we are and support each other while recognizing what a difficult climb it is. I think women are capable of achieving anything they want to. I still believe in my mom's advice that we can aim for the moon and go for it, and we should. But I think as life gets more complicated as we get older, I think we need each other in more ways than we ever imagined. And I think we need to create villages that really sustain women to keep them in the corporate world if they want to be, or starting businesses where they compete with the corporate world, or whether they stay home and raise families. And we all have really important, really hard jobs. And I hope coming out of COVID, we see the value and the gifts that everybody has that they can bring to the table.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate your candor and just taking the time to have this conversation today.
Thanks, Linda.
New this season, Amy and I are going to continue the conversation on Fireside Chat. It's a new live platform where we can interact and bring you directly into the discussion. We will be on Fireside for International Women's Day, Tuesday, March 8th at noon Eastern. All of the details can be found in the show notes and on the website, www.thearena-podcast.com. We'd love to see and speak with you. Thank you for being here. I will share links to Amy's social media and where you can find her book. It was a great read. All proceeds will be donated to nonprofits that support women and girls. I look forward to sharing my next guest's story of spending a year of living spiritually, in which she explored more than 24 spiritual practices. Until next time, my name is Linda McLaughlin in The Arena.